WMFO, Medford.
It's already starting. It's Mike on the mic here, along with Mark and Les Hurwitz. And we're talking about things that are already making me giggle.
What were we just talking about?
Trump. And what else did you
say?
Well,
I'm not sure, but it wasn't funny.
No. Well,
and we can't talk politics.
No.
No, it's not allowed.
We would never do it. Sounds like that microphone is happy now. Try talking again.
Yeah, I was.
Oh,
my
wow.
Eardrums were just blowing out.
Usually that mic is not. Maybe somebody actually fixed it.
No.
Oh, you sound.
That wouldn't happen.
You sound
here.
Good on that. That's good.
For once, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So it's WMFO Medford, and Mark and Les are here with me till 11 a.m. When these guys are here, Mark always has a 4 or 5 song set for today because they're kind of long.
2 songs are long, and I just, well, because Dr. John passed. You know, I don't know if did I do a spoiler? Did I just ruin it for you?
That happened long ago.
But, you know, sounds like we'll probably be doing a little bit of his music.
Yeah, we will. And I didn't know any of those songs that you gave me today.
Wow, really?
None of them. No.
Even, oh, wow.
Nope.
You know, I'm surprised about one of those because one of them is New Noise.
Oh, all right, well, good. We'll play that one first.
Okay.
Hopefully. And you're also going to talk about the latest in local restaurants and gossip and news.
There's some
and
big restaurant news that's been coming out the last couple weeks.
Very nice.
And something opened last night. It was a family and friends night.
Mm-hmm.
But something soft opened last night, and it's near where you live. And it's one of the best pizzerias in the country. So we'll talk later.
Oh. Mm. I just swallowed.
Mm. Must have been pollen. I've been swallowing pollen all
week. I don't get pollen
week.
On my pizza.
Ugh. My car is green today.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
You know, usually it's rust colored. It's old.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
Hi, Les.
Oh, hi there, Mike and company.
And company? Who walked in?
That'll be me.
Oh. So what are you talking, you know, I'm very happy that what you're talking about today includes Cleo Lane.
Yeah, I'm glad that it's nice that between Cleo Lane and Art Tatum, I opened up a door here, and that's kind of nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll talk about something almost interesting today, actually.
Yeah, sure. So, all right, so we're going to do some New Noise in Freeform till about 10:30 a.m., and at 10:30, we're going to have Les do something maybe interesting.
Okay.
And just after the top of the hour, Mark's set will play, and we'll have some talk from you about restaurants, and then we're going to remember. Yeah, we have another person to remember, Dr.
Great
John.
Dr. John, who I saw years ago, and it was one of the best shows I ever saw.
Yeah, very, 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 very entertaining dude, and
yep.
We lost him, 77 years old, just last week, and I picked 4 songs that show off his phenomenal piano playing, and there's a live cut that shows off what a great entertainer he was, so I look forward to that sometime between 10:30 and 11. But I want to start off with New Noise from a local band called GA20. This is brand new, called One Night Man, at WMFO, Medford.
Some days are harder, some days are gold, some days you barter, if I'ma be so bold. Sometimes I feel like folding my hand and be one I'm in.
this is more like it.
You're listening to WMFO Medford.
WMFO, Medford, 9:25 in the morning. Hello.
Welcome to the 1980s.
Yeah, welcome to the time machine that is WMFO, Medford.
Or maybe that was the 90s. I don't remember.
It's all the same thing.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, to hear that. He's a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, that guy.
I know. Original member of the Cars, mm-hmm. Elliot Easton, and a big hit, a big BCN hit he had.
Yeah.
Wearing down like a wheel. He had a record called Change, No Change.
You know who was a huge fan? He influenced Slash.
Oh.
Slash listened to tons of Aerosmith and tons of Cars. He was big into the Boston bands. And you can hear a little bit of Slash in Easton's music. So he was definitely, he was very influential on a lot of people.
Yeah, different hairstyles, though, completely.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yep.
Just before that, a great unheard track from the Feelies. From an album called The Good Earth that was slipping into something. That was really psychedelic and awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Feelies are very much sort of like easygoing, kind of, you know, poppy, major key, but that was totally different for them.
That was great.
I like that a lot. And we lost Rocky Erickson from the 13th mm-hmm. floor elevator. So I want to play something that our own Brian Young had posted on Facebook last week and said this is his favorite song.
I was so
ever.
Glad Brian posted that. Yeah. That is an amazing version of a great song. And
yeah.
Talk about influential. I mean, Rocky Erickson, Billy Gibbons, he basically was saying there'd be no ZZ Top without 13th floor elevators.
And that's something.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so Bob Dylan cover, of course, it's all over now. Baby Blue, the CD there was Easter Everywhere. Some wonderful Beatles from Revolver just before that, She Said. And Boston's own GA20, brand new noise from them, a single called One Night Man started us off.
Great set.
Yeah, it was good. It was different. It was free for me. It was WMFO.
It was free for me. Don't hear much free for me anymore.
Hmm. Well, you got to tune in here on
Saturdays.
Because I never know what I'm going to do before I come here.
No, you never know what you're going to do.
Why plan?
Even outside of here, you never know what you're going to do.
No. And speaking of someone who doesn't know what he's going to do.
Nice segue.
Hi, Les.
Yeah, I think, hi, Mike.
Do you think? You do? That's good to know.
I do.
All right. So at 9:27 in the morning, really happy to introduce you. And tell everybody what you're going to do. It includes one of my favorites that I didn't really know about until you started talking about Cleo Lane.
Well, I'm delighted that I introduced something new into a program that never shows anything new. But that's okay. We'll talk about this another
that's
time.
Just not true.
I'm glad. Actually, Cleo Lane, for those of you who are not terribly familiar with her or familiar with her at all, she's still with us. She's going to be 93. I think she's in her 92nd year and was slapped delightfully on the left shoulder with a flat of the sword, making her a dame or a lady, Cleo Lane, one of the very few.
She was
jazz.
Slapped delightfully. That's
yeah.
great.
And her husband, John Dankforth, who died a few years ago, one of the most skilled of the UK jazz musicians. I'll tell you, the jazz aspect in UK should not be forgotten. And Cleo Lane is a proponent of probably, it's about the best representative out of the UK. She arguably may be the best pop singer technically who ever lived as far as the physicality of the voice. What she did with her voice is... Oh, you know, Sarah Vaughan gets close, but Cleo Lane stands by herself. What I would like to start with is a recording made, I think, 1980, with John Dankforth, who played the sax, and along with Cleo Lane. Cleo is doing scat singing in this. And remember, scat singing releases the voice, and it becomes totally free to become a true instrument because there are no words, only syllables. And, you know, we hear it in Sarah Vaughan, and we hear it in Mel Torme, and we hear it in a lot of great pop and jazz singers. But when we hear Cleo Lane doing this sort of thing, by the way, what I really should talk to you about for a moment is one of the reasons you're hearing this kind of representation. I'm using two powers in music today. One called beauty, whatever that means. Beauty is different with every one of us, but we all recognize beauty as a human source of consciousness, and we see it in our own ways, and it's controversial, but it's always there. We're going to hear either music of great beauty, as we perceive beauty to be, or great sensationalism, as we are about to hear, in terms of what can be done by a human being through the language of music. What we're going to hear first is Cleo Lane singing something called Crazy Rhythm. This was written in the 20s by a tunesmith, one of the American tunesmiths, here we go, Sid Caesar. No, but it's Irving Caesar in this case. And he wrote this way back, one of the earlier Broadway musicals contains this piece. You'll know it, probably. Crazy Rhythm still is with us during what is now the better part of a century. Listen to what she does with John Dankforth's, that is Cleo Lane, what she does with John Dankforth in his arrangement of Crazy Rhythm and listen to the reality. This is the sensationalism. Cleo Lane has such an incredible technique with her voice that when she is released to unleash the technique she has, she is like the great instrumentalist. And in combination with the sax, you hear a melding of the human voice with no words and the sax. It's almost as if it's an instrument of its own. Here is Crazy Rhythm.
Showdown, I'm too highbrow, you're too low down. Crazy rhythm, it's goodbye to you. I know that when the highbrow meets a lowbrow, looking a long roadway, soon the highbrow, he has no brow. Ain't it a shame and you're to blame? What's the use of prohibition? You produce the same condition. Crazy rhythm, I go crazy too. Gonna get a crazy. Troubles fade into the distance. Never really mind about inflation till you get a taste of the sensation.
Isn't that something amazing? No one in human history, music-wise, can replicate that sort of synchronization and technology. I mean, she is, and I say is, she's still with us, although she obviously sings no longer. Although there's a recording she made when she was 75. It's there. I think it's probably on YouTube. At any rate, what I said was the utilization of the two powers, one of which, sensationalism, was just evoked as an example. Now you're going to be wrapped in a blanket, the fabric of which you'll never be able to identify, a fabric of beauty. You'll be surrounded by it in terms of the aura and the atmosphere of that which comes to your ears. Whether you think of beauty the same way I do is irrelevant, but it cannot be denied, that the aspect of beauty, the search for what we call beautiful, will be heard. And you're going to hear the same singer, Cleo Lane. Now, there's a John Williams. When we think of John Williams, we generally think of the composer, the wonderful American composer who did so many movies. You know, was Jaws. How about those first two notes that made him famous in Jaws, and then so many movies. This is not the same John Williams. This is a John Williams who's still alive, too, like the John Williams we know. He is a classical English guitarist, and it's an arrangement of a tune we generally remember, many of us, I think, in the great classic movie, The Deer Hunter, from the Vietnamese area. But it was actually introduced back, around 1971, I believe, in another movie which we have forgotten about called The Walking Stick. It's called He Was Beautiful. And the subtitle of it, Cavatina, which in Italian really means a short tune. But what a wonderful tune. You'll know it. And this is an arrangement by John Williams playing the guitar, his arrangement for and with Cleo Lane. Listen to what Lane can do as not a singer, but a musician. Here we are. Knowing now. Oh, I was waiting for the applause. It's there, but Mark no turned it off.
My fault.
No, there's applause in almost every one of these, and I think it's a reaction that should be part of the music. Why don't you, if you can, Mike, leave the audience, listen to the audience sometimes, and you're going to hear something like a football game in a little while. It's remarkable what music can do to us or for us. By the way, a question was asked by one of the erudite listeners who always listen to me, even though I, of course, question his judgment, but that's okay. That's another story. The question was about the influence upon Cleo Lane by her father, who also dealt with music. All I can say is this. She was so singular and so much a part of herself. She begins and ends a reign, that is R-E-I-G-N, of a particular kind of beauty that just isn't there anymore. And this is there's an analogy to this. Let's go back to Bach. J.S. Bach and his SOBs. What I mean by SOBs is Sons of Bach. That's what I always used to lovingly call the Sons of Bach when I taught college, the SOBs. Go back to Bach's father, a guitarist, whose name was Veit, V-E-I-D-T, Bach, who played popular music, if you will, popular at the time, 1600s, on the guitar. So there was absolutely no relationship between Veit Bach and the great Lutheran giant, whom we still know as Johann Sebastian Bach. So that's the best way I can answer that thing. There was absolutely no influence that I can measure based upon anything pre-influential in the development of the great talent of Cleo Lane, except the interest quotient, perhaps. But there we are. Let's go on. There was a movie last year that was released called, I think it was called The Green Room. I have a question about it because I didn't see it. A story about a pianist by the name of Don Shirley, and he's become much better known because of the movie, which I believe is a good movie. It was brought up for the Academy Award, as I recall. I don't know much about what's going on. I think didn't they win it for the screenplay or something? At any rate, it's a story about Don Shirley, much of which, and here we go, you can have a great movie like Amadeus in 1984 when that came out, the story of Mozart, a lot of fiction in it, but great music. The same thing with Don Shirley. There's a lot of apocryphal material in the movie, questionable in terms of authenticity. Even the family of Don Shirley, the descendants, argue about some of those things, which makes history very vulnerable. But the movie is obviously worth seeing, but it's the music of Don Shirley, and that's why we hear him. That's why the movie was made. He could not be denied. When I was in my 20s, when I was just starting to teach after my concert career, I became absolutely mesmerized by his approach to fusion. And by the way, go back a moment to Cleo Lane and John Williams. Wasn't that a perfect example of fusion? A classical guitarist writing in the classical style? As a backdrop to a pop tune. And you couldn't have better fusion than that. Now, Don Shirley was a master of fusion from a totally different viewpoint, and this is going to open up your senses, humbly, I think, because you are going to listen to my description of what I react to whenever I hear Don Shirley play. He was a real individualist. And there's a lot to be known about him and a lot that's apocryphal about him, even in the biographies. Very arcane figure. He had two unearned, that is honorary, PhDs, one in music and one in psychology, which he taught when he felt that the black was not being used correctly in our society. Here we go with the same old thing. He stopped music for a while. He went back to study psychology and taught it for a while. And then, of course, music took over, and he just had to do his thing. Appreciate it or not, he was an incredible force, which very few of us know about today. Now, the aspect of fusion. Let's take George Shearing, whom we have discussed before, and we've discussed fusion before. The idea of adhering to a particular style. For instance, when Shearing would take a tune, he could take a tune like, let's see, My Funny Valentine, and play it in the style of six composers, and still have the tune alive. What Don Shirley did was actually take music out of the bank of a Chopin, for instance. You're going to hear Chopin, you're going to hear the actual notes of a Chopin nocturne as a backdrop beginning the tune, which is This Nearly Was Mine, written by someone we know, and I just talked about him, Richard Rodgers, who wrote My Funny Valentine. And the question is this, which comes up in my mind, is when we hear the tune, and it's just not the treatment, but the treatment enhances the reality of atmosphere surrounding the tune, is the tune of a great American songsmith as relevant in terms of composition and core value as the tune of Chopin, which is exemplified here, not by Chopin's tune, but by Richard Rodgers' tune with a Chopin adherence. And what the abilities of Don Shirley is, it's so honorary and so honorable. He maintains the style of Chopin all the way through. He ends it with some of the chords of Chopin. And the most incredible thing, almost miraculous, if we think about it, he inculcates the Chopin tune almost as if Chopin had written this tune. And then ask yourself, when I hear a Chopin nocturne, the melody, which is so wonderful and still with us, is it any better then? And that's a stupid question. When we think of the beauty that comes out of this tune. Also, the piano playing of Don Shirley is unique. He was incapable of playing an unbeautiful note. He deals with the piano from the viewpoint of true artistry. And his trio exists of him, of he, a string bass, and a cello. And what is fascinating, at first you think, Shirley is using the damper pedal in another way to exemplify the lower notes, making them richer on the piano. What he was actually doing was using the cello to come in gradually on the lowest note of the chord that was played on the piano, the same note, but with the arco, the bow, playing very gracefully the same note. And what it does is somehow expand the sound of the piano. It's almost like an organ underneath the piano sound. Listen to this wonderful thing. Listen to the quality of the melody and ask yourself about Chopin at the same time. The melding of the two composers, the tune Smith, interesting, and the great romantic composer, 1810 to 1849, Frederick Chopin. Now you're going to hear Don Shirley again doing a piece called This The Nearness of You, I should say. And what he uses here is the concerto technique of Rachmaninoff. He takes some of the backdrops of Rachmaninoff and fuses this wonderful tune written by Hoagy Carmichael. And by the way, I think of Hoagy Carmichael, actually, as one of the greatest tunesmiths of them all. Think of this. He wrote Stardust. And think of this. I personally think of this as an even greater melody than Stardust, and that's Skylark, which is a wonderful, wonderful tune. But listen to The Nearness of You. It stands right up. Hoagy Carmichael was a wonderful tunesmith. And by the way, on the side, he went to law school, Hoagy Carmichael, and passed the bar the first time, became a lawyer, and never had to use it because of the fact that music was everything to him. Listen again to the inculcation, in this case of the cello, and also French horn. French horn in a pop tune. Listen to this thing. Have fun. Thank you. I think there's a serious question here, really, about the placement of melody, whether it's pop or whether it's in the Romantic period 150 years ago. It's very interesting, isn't it? There's a relevance there. I'm not asking you to agree with me. I'm asking you to react to what you just heard with whatever little intro introspect I'm giving you historically. Okay, now the next piece, Vladimir Horowitz. Now we're going serious. We're going to go straight to classic. Horowitz, arguably the greatest piano player and one of the great musicians of the 20th century. Just his 1928 American debut. The review by Olin Downs, perhaps the greatest music critic of all time in America, in the New York Times the morning after, said, the greatest pianist ever, alive or dead. You know, so I think he liked him a lot. 25 years afterward, in 1953, Horowitz at Carnegie Hall celebrated the 25th anniversary of his debut by giving a concert that can never be forgotten. Fortunately, it was all recorded, one of which was an encore, the Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2 by Liszt. And it's his, that is Horowitz's transcription of an already difficult piece of music to play. And the reaction at the end, Mark is going to make sure that we hear the reaction, the audience reaction to it. It'll be part of the performance in reality. It is such an incredible experience. And by the way, the reason I'm telling you about this piece, not only because of the aspect of sensationalism, the other side of beauty as a force, but what sensationalism really means. Horowitz himself was so excited by his own playing of this thing, without any ego, of course. He said it was arguably the greatest excitement that I've ever experienced playing in front of an audience. Now, for those of you who have a time clock or a time watch, set it up. At about 4 minutes, you're going to hear the end of the first part of the Rhapsody. What Liszt does is expose the listener to the themes. And that's what Horowitz does, and of course he adds the notes because it's a transcription. It's really incredible. But he brings, that is, Liszt brings the piece down to a form of peace. It's all peace, P-E-A-C-E, almost to no notes at all. It almost goes away, and what he is saying, come into my parlor, said the spider to the fly. He's getting you ready for utter seduction. And from 4 minutes on, get ready for a ride. Get ready to go on a roller coaster, to hear a band of excitement that develops. And again, the time watch, set it at 7 minutes and 19 seconds. That's the beginning of the end, which is given to us in certification by the reaction you're going to hear in the audience. And I'll tell you a little bit about that afterward. Here we go.
You're listening to WMFO, Medford.